Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the largest segment of society, to those of you who realize that the world's religious, political, economic, military, and media institutions are corrupt, counterproductive, and the problems that plague them are irresolvable. I am Yada. Our phone number, if you'd like to join us over the next 2 hours, is toll-free 877-300-7645. You know, Scott, we mocked the situation in Waco, which is Waco, throughout the program in the first hour yesterday. I learned something that I did not know previously when reading the initial articles on the Cossacks and the
Banditos.
Yes, that police knew in advance that this meeting between Cossacks and Banditos was going to occur, and that they knew in advance that there was going to be a fight. And there were at least a dozen police officers, nearly as many highway patrol officers, plus a cadre of, oh boy, ATF. They're the ones that, of course, started the Branch Davidian massacre. All there in advance before any of this occurred. Now, can you imagine police so inept, the ATF so inept, that they're there waiting for this kind of a shootout to occur, and they let it happen? And, of course, they're even saying, we don't know how many of the 9 dead were killed by the ATF or the cops.
Yes, I can.
God.
Obviously I can, because this isn't like the first, you know, this isn't the first time that they've been completely inept. So, yeah, I mean.
Inept is one thing. How about counterproductive?
Well, if you know what's going to happen, why wouldn't you, I don't know, why would you even let it happen? I mean, if you knew it was going to happen, why would you let it escalate to this?
Yeah. You know, ATF, they're so repulsive. I know story after story in Virginia about the ABC and ATF types harassing co-eds here at the university in unmarked cars, trying on dark streets, pulling over girls that have a case of water in the back of their trunk, and scaring them literally to death with the way they drove, the way they were belligerent, unmarked cars, no badges, threatening them with guns. I mean, these guys are goons. They really are. They're just goons. You know, if you were forced to choose between who would you want to have to trust, a motorcycle gang of Cossacks and Banditos or the ATF, based on Branch Davidian, based upon the stories of family friends here in Virginia, I think I would go for the Cossacks and Banditos.
Yeah, at least you know that. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I can see that.
They don't have the authority of the federal government behind their belligerence. Wow. It's a sad state of affairs. You know what? The one thing that most of them have in common, though? Most of them are ex-military. Both sides. Banditos, Cossacks are formed by ex-military, as are the ranks of the ATF and police. So maybe that's part of the belligerency equation. Speaking of belligerency, the news out of Egypt is that their security forces, now in Egypt they have a religious police, so they're talking about security forces here. This is the new term. You know, you have security forces are a domestic army. When you read security forces, read domestic army. In America we call them the Department of Homeland Security. The domestic army is the FBI, the ATF, et cetera, et cetera. So these are federal agents within Egypt that are focused on their own citizens as the enemy. That's the security forces. It's happening around the world, and it's a serious problem. Well, the Egyptians, the security forces, are using sexual violence against detainees on a massive scale, according to the International Federation for Human Rights. This is a country that the United States props up. This is the country that the United States arms their military, and it's a country that the military overthrew the popularly elected government with a military coup using American weapons. We are the basis of this country being able to impose its security forces. Its security forces use American weapons. And what are they doing? They are sexually assaulting women on a massive scale. Now, women are being sexually assaulted in the United States military on a massive scale. There's something about military belligerence that leads men to the point that they think that they can sexually harass other men and women. And they're doing both in the U.S. military. But a massive scale in the U.S. military means that about one out of every two or three women is sexually assaulted during her time in the military, and that she is about 8 to 10 times more likely to be assaulted in the military than a woman is to be assaulted in civilian life. Now, that's a massive difference. But in Egypt, over 90% of Egyptian women claim to have been sexually assaulted multiple times in their lives. All as a result of Islam. Islam is a sexually abusive religion. But when I drove down the street after lunch yesterday into a Hatita housing community associated with the university that's in town here, and you saw a woman wearing a full hijab, and you just say, what in the hell is wrong with you? Why would you humiliate yourself wearing the black covering of a Muslim woman when you live in a free country and you're associated with a university and you're not smart enough to recognize the sexual abusive nature of this revolting religion? There's nothing comical about it. I wanted to roll down the window and say, wake up, woman. Have some personal dignity. But here in Islam and Egypt, the vast preponderance of women are sexually abused by Muslims because their religion gives them the authority to do so. A report by the organization says that men, women, and children are being abused to eliminate public protest. Well, they're being abused for lots of reasons, but in this report, it is, you want to protest the government, you'll be sexually abused. And what's interesting in Islam, you know, I was listening to, during one of our drive times, Rush Limbaugh was doing a piece when he says, you know, what is it about the hypocrisy of the left where they won't let you say anything critical of Islam and they won't let you say anything critical of homosexual marriage? And yet homosexual marriage is offensive to Muslims, so by promoting homosexual marriage, aren't they being offensive to Muslims? And I wanted to call Rush and say, no. In Islam, they give lip service to being opposed to homosexuality, but homosexuality runs rampant in Islam, which is why men are being sexually assaulted, harassed. And it's not being, they're not being sexually harassed by women. They're being, because there are no women in the security forces, they're being sexually harassed by men. That's the reason why in Afghanistan, some of our troops became so despondent. It's why post-traumatic stress syndrome, it runs so high. They know that when they turned a community over to the Afghan police/security forces, that the first thing they did was establish bocce ba, which is they would go into each home. They would demand that each home pay them a bribe for security purposes to keep them from burning down the home, and that when they encountered a attractive young boy, they would gang rape him typically for weeks on end. The Quran itself speaks of two different types of virgins in paradise. It speaks of men encountering men as virgins, and that it says that the shame associated with men having sex with men won't exist in paradise. So there is a homosexual aspect, certainly a bisexual aspect, to Muhammad's paradise. Yes, there are homosexual virgins in Muhammad's paradise. That's what the Quran says. Don't shoot me as the messenger of this. I'm just reporting the facts. So here in Egypt, with a government propped up by America, armed by America, the Muslims are sexually harassing women. You know that Egypt has the highest percentage of female genital mutilation? It's 90% of Egyptian girls are sexually mutilated by their mothers. Egypt is 90% Muslim. It's 100% coefficient there of religion to sexual mutilation. Somewhere along the way, someone's going to come to realize, another person somewhere out there is going to say, you know, the problem is Islam. We ought not be protecting it. We ought not be coddling it. We ought not be promoting it. We ought not be tolerating it. That Islam, because it is so abusive to women, because it is so sexually perverted, because Muhammad was a pedophile and a rapist and a sexual predator, because the Quran justifies his repulsive behavior, that Islam cannot be tolerated. It is illegal. It's criminal. It's immoral. And when you tolerate something, when you promote something, when you accept something that is criminal and immoral, you're being criminal and immoral. You are aiding and abetting a crime against women when you're being supportive of Islam. That is Islam's nature. Does that mean that all Muslims are sexual predators? No, just all good ones. According to the Quran, you need to follow Muhammad's example. Muhammad was a sexual predator. So all good Muslims follow Muhammad's example as it is laid out in the Quran and Sunnah, the Hadith. And that means that if they're good Muslims as men, they will be sexual predators. And there is no consequence for them being sexual predators. They can be pedophiles. They can be rapists. And they will be. You ought not tolerate something that repulsive in your presence. You ought not be ignorant of it. You ought not be accepting of it. The only moral choice is to be opposed to it, to recognize that we have to disassociate from it, to expose it, and to condemn it. The article continues to say, many are subject to virginity tests. Can you imagine? In Europe, in the United States, in Asia, forcing a woman to undergo a virginity test so that they can determine whether or not the woman should be incarcerated, she should be whipped. If she fails the virginity test, which could be for a number of reasons having nothing to do with her her prior sexual indulgences, she's beat. She's jailed. And imagine that. Imagine a country that warped. Imagine America saying, that's okay that they do that. Nah, 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 nah. I'm going to put my fingers in my ears. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to have to process it. Because political correctness tells me that I need to coexist. I need to respect them. I need to understand them. And everything will be just fine. So I want to understand why they subject little girls to virginity tests. And I don't stop there. They gang rape them over and over and over again. That's what this report says, that the girls, young girls, who are yanked off the street, first are subjected to virginity tests, then they're gang raped after arrest. It says that the surge in sexual violence escalated after the Egyptian military coup in 2013. It's part of the Sisi government. It's directly related to the Islamic military controlling that country. For those who thought that, boy, you know, we had to support the overthrow of the Muslim Brotherhood regime of Morsi, and so we ought to support the military junta that's taken over that country, even though they have eliminated all opposition, even though they're infinitely worse than Mubarak ever was, into their suppression of free speech. of political rivals in a country that already had a 90% coefficient of sexual abuse amongst men being perpetrated on women, particularly those empowered by the government, even before the military junta took over the country. And now it has been radically surged as a result. I mean, can you imagine surging from already having a 90% frequency of sexual assault on women, and you have an increase so large it's called a surge by the inspection report? And yet we just yawn as Americans. Don't bother to understand cause and effect. What's causing this effect? Not even speaking out against it. Continuing to pay them billions of dollars a year. Continuing to arm them. To give them the means, the weapons to be able to abuse women in this way. Goes on to say, the perpetrators are rarely held to account. And the impunity points to a cynical political strategy that is aimed at silencing all opposition. Yeah, they're partly right. That is, the perpetrators in Islam are almost never held to account because Islam never punishes the man for sexually abusing a woman. Yeah, virtually never. The woman is always to blame for her own rape in Islam, and she's the one that's punished. That's what the Quran and Hadith show. But beyond all of that, and that's the practice in Islam, but beyond that, they're not just trying to silence opposition. Islam is so warped, it's so mentally corrosive, morally corrosive. The men that are doing this don't think there's anything wrong with it. That's why they're not held into account. They're doing it because they're Muslims. They're not doing it to silence opposition. The average buffoon in the Egyptian security forces could give two hoots about protest. They don't care. What they care about is rape. Their whole religion is based on rape, on the conquest and control over women. That's how it was founded. It's what the Quran advocates. It's what Muhammad was like. It's why Arabs became Muslims in the first place. It has nothing to do at the base level with silencing opposition. It has all to do with the corruptive nature of this religion where women are so maltreated. Police, intelligence officers, and members of the military are all guilty of targeting male and female detainees, homosexual and heterosexual rape. What a repulsive set of circumstances. And again, cause and effect. One guy said, I saw an officer was grabbing a young woman by the breast, and I said to him, well, if you want to arrest her, but you don't have to touch her breast. He grabbed me exactly as he had her, calling on other police officers to join me, and they beat me. They insulted me. Imagine that. Somebody tried to hold a Muslim security force operative accountable for sexually assaulting a young girl in public. And what they did is they grabbed that man, just as they had the girl, grabbed him by the chest and began to harass him. Then they beat him. They beat him to the point that he could no longer stand up. And then after beating him, two of the soldiers sexually assaulted him. They raped him, sodomized him. The woman, then, who he was trying to protect, was then approached by the senior officer who was in charge of the security detail. He then got into the van, and he says, come here. I'm going to show you that I'm a man. The senior officer raped her in front of the soldiers. The soldiers laughed, and then he raped me again, and then the soldiers raped me. I was paralyzed. I started to vomit blood. My life is ruined. I'm afraid of my own son. I'm afraid of my own husband. I'm afraid now my own father, my husband, my son, my father are going to kill me because I was raped. It's common in Islam. The victims of rape fear their husbands, fear their fathers, fear their sons. Because in Islam, it's the victim of rape, the woman, who is the guilty party. If you're out there, and for some godforsaken reason, you are politically correct, and you think it's inappropriate to expose and condemn Islam for the sexual violence that it inspires, then I'm going to tell you, you're as morally corrupt, as morally depraved as the men that raped this woman. You're as morally corrupt and morally depraved as this woman's son, father, and husband, who would now hold her accountable for being victimized. You're no better than they are. Anyone who speaks on behalf of Islam is either wholly ignorant, and if you're ignorant, you ought not be talking about it, or wholly and completely irrational and immoral. That's the reality. We need to deal with it. We need to recognize how repulsive this religion is, why this religion is so prone to the enslavement of little girls and turning them in to sex slaves, to gang rapes, to homosexuality, to pedophilia, all of which model Muhammad's example. There's no running away from it. It is what it is. This is the story that came out of Iraq just 2 days ago when the United States lied about not putting boots on the ground in the conflict against the Islamic State. We sent in Huey helicopters and Osprey rotorcraft aircraft into Syria, 100 or more miles into Syria from Iraq, and we conducted a ground raid. The soldiers rescued, they said, a woman, an Iraqi from the minority Yazidi sect, who was being held by the couple as a sex slave, according to the White House. And, of course, they not only killed the man that, when the report came out, they said was the number two in charge of the military, the militias for the Islamic State, and subsequently said, well, you know, he was sort of high up. And they kidnapped his wife. Hello, Glenn. I'm glad that you've you called. How are you today?
Yes. Okay, thanks. As much as I am a man of many words, you know, I think there comes a time, and it's good to use one's words, but there comes a time when words don't have to cut it, and when existential threats are just too great, and I have, you know, and so my God is the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, of Joshua, you know, Yosha, of Samson, of Dode.
Yeah.
Those men knew how to wield a sword at the appropriate time.
Yes, they did.
And there comes a time when if you are not willing to oppose an utterly conscienceless sociopathic, you know, barbarian, then you're missing something. And I will tell you, if I were ever on the streets of America, and I was carrying concealed, and I saw anyone attempting to perpetrate this sort of thing, I would involve myself, and I would attempt to stop it with lethal force if necessary, with less than lethal force if possible.
Yeah. Okay. Let's recognize that. And if we were in the situation, I'm not in Egypt, and I'm not. I've been to Egypt. I'm never going back.
Right.
But let's put ourselves in America, where we have chosen to tolerate Islam, and you find yourself in a mosque, and a woman is being abused this way. Because let's face it, these are not just barbarians; they're Muslims. This isn't an isolated circumstance. It is prevalent in the religion. It is the basis of the religion. So what we're dealing with is Islam here. You were in a mosque and and you were armed, and a Muslim woman was being abused in this way. Are you telling me that you would shoot to kill the perpetrator when all of those around the perp and the victim would be doing the same thing? They'd be laughing and wanting their turn to play along.
I consider that a bait and switch. The Qadi, what changes, like if I saw an isolated incident where I wouldn't necessarily remember. Now, you said something about, policemen and military soldiers.
Just make the connection. Let's make the connection. Those policemen weren't doing this because they were security force operators. They were doing it because they were Muslims.
But my Muslims, I understand. But they will also depend on the scenario and the numbers and the potential.
Right. Yeah, okay. I understand.
Get their ratio, how many you're up against and stuff. If there were two or three, I have less trouble with it. When you're surrounded by dozens, obviously it's a much more life-threatening situation. But there might come a point at which one decides.
There's a reason. There's a reason that I escalated the situation. Because this is not lone wolf. This is not an isolated case. We're talking about the direct consequence of Islam. We're talking about Muslims following Muhammad's example, men feeling empowered to do this and not being held accountable for it, and women being victimized and then fearing for their life that their own sons, their husbands, and their fathers would kill them because they were raped. So the problem is pervasive. There's 1.5 billion Muslims on the planet. There's a lot of them.
Right.
So, since we're not going to go off and kill them, the only thing that you can do is to expose them, condemn them, isolate them.
All right, my turn. All right. Now, look, on a large scale, I would make a loose and weak analogy to the movie V for Vendetta, in which the individual hero begins as a lone vigilante and is called a terrorist. He's vilified. He is, and in the end, the thinking about him changes, and people's minds and hearts are changed, and eventually the masses actually walk through, the military troops, and the masses of the people are overcome. Mm-hmm. Now, I realize that's a somewhat weak analogy, and that's fiction.
Yeah.
However,
and stay in America, you couldn't do it. You could not do that in today's.
Right, and there have been multiple times in history when Islam has, in a formalized, has attempted to conquer Europe and was militarily stopped and turned back.
Right,
and that may become, and of course, that's precisely what we see in the Valley of Haman Gog in Ezekiel 30:39.
We don't see them militarily defeated. We see Yahweh and intervening.
It doesn't specify. I don't concur with you on that necessarily. It says they are killed. It is not specific. Yahweh does not say he says he gives.
Yeah, as it relates to Armageddon, they're melted in their skins. Their very skin melts off of them.
And that could be a neutron. That could be a neutron nuke. Okay, that could be a human-made. It says there's definitely divine intervention.
It's in direct relationship to Yahweh's return. They're incinerated because they're of Yahweh's return. But anyway,
battle and Armageddon is the same because I do not.
No, Magog and Armageddon are different. Magog is Yahweh intervenes because the Israelites are incapable of defending themselves. Now how he intervenes and stops them all, because it's interesting there that their equipment is not destroyed, but they are. But you mentioned Armageddon, the Valley of Armageddon, and the rendezvous. Armageddon is usually associated with the last battle, which is people are melted alive, and they're melted alive because of Yahweh's return. But your point is, Glenn, that there is a time for the sword. And while it's impossible to argue that there are times when violence is required because of the imminent nature of the threat. Today, in our circumstance, if we were to, and I'm not going to, encourage violence, and I've never done that.
No,
and I'm not going to start. Islam is perpetrating grotesque harassment against women. It was born out of rape and out of pedophilia and of sexual conquest, and it continues to be sexually abusive. And that should be intolerable to people everywhere, both men and women. No matter where they live, we should all be absolutely hateful of a religious, political doctrine that has for 1,400 years sexually abused women and treated women as second-class citizens. So we should all be opposed to it. And because of the scope of the problem, I think the only thing that we can do is to use evidence and reason to expose and condemn and then to isolate.
Yeah, wherever possible. I'd like to hang on to this break here.
Yeah, we can't. But in the big scheme of things, I think if we were to advocate anything else other than that, it would be counterproductive. We'll be back in just a moment. President Obama said that U.S. forces who have been conducting airstrikes against the Islamic State in Syria and neighboring Iraq would not enter either of those countries in a combat role. That's what he promised. Although several thousand U.S. troops are in Iraq training and assisting Iraqi forces, they're actually training and assisting Iranian Shiite militias, the administration said that there are none in Syria. Not only is somebody lying here, I want to just talk about the counterproductive nature of force against a religion.
So,
2 days ago, the United States got killed by bombing in a mosque the number two person with the Islamic State. And on this raid, they got a rather high-up individual in the Islamic State. What did the Islamic State do yesterday? They captured the capital of the Anbar province, Ramadi.
Right. And they're saying they're going to retake it. Yeah, well, part of this is...
They took it yesterday.
We saw the same garbage in Vietnam. The military commanders often complained that they weren't permitted to win. That the poor power politicians and people who derive profit from war will often prevent decisive victory. So he just wanted to poorly manage.
Well, much prevention that took place when we invaded Iraq and Afghanistan. It was a lot of destruction. I recall shock and awe.
Right.
And we didn't win with shock and awe. We didn't win when we were, elbow to elbow with troops there. And now we're expecting to win with some military airstrikes and some insurgency operations.
These types of conflicts, I discount them because they don't represent a society that's being invaded. Beating an entire society dedicated to beating back an invasion. So, I want to put that on hold for just a second. I mean, those these half-baked dinglings, what they do with this stuff is just obviously ridiculous. But you talk about people, about using words and trying to persuade people. I sometimes call into this sort of libertarian-oriented, almost anarchist-type show. Where these people spend their time, defending people against parking tickets and railing against municipal ordinances. They love to swim in the kiddie pool of political ethics and stuff.
Right. That's funny.
Yeah. They've got their water wings on and their garbage.
Boots on the ground.
When I tried to bring up the issue of female genital mutilation.
And that, by the way, is not the kiddie pool.
I tried to do that. Boy, they were in denial. They were resistant. They did not want to. Oh, no, because they have a buddy who's Muslim who has a website, and he says, oh, no, no. It's like, excuse me, the UN says there are over 100 million women affected by this.
The numbers, between 125 and 250 million, depending on whose research you acquiesce to. And that's not in history. That's right now at this very moment.
Right. right?
Right.
So I figured I was at least safe with 100, you know, but
right.
140 is a good number. But the, but it just shows you the apathy. I mean, these are supposedly people with, social conscience and who are aware of some of what's going on in the world as opposed to the Joe Sixpack, you know, watching TV.
So, so the 100 to 200 million little girls that have been sexually mutilated because they had the misfortune of being born into an Islamic family, that that's not real because they have a buddy that's a Muslim and he has a website.
There's
an intelligent response.
They put them on to deny, oh, no, Islam is not bad. You know, it's not, he's a nice guy. And you know, he says it doesn't, it's not the case.
Right.
And we can just go back to parking tickets because I'm bringing up something.
The fact that Islamic groups are kidnapping and gang raping little girls is irrelevant. Parking tickets are relevant. The fact that 99.9% of the terrorist acts perpetrated in the world today are perpetrated by Muslims is irrelevant. But the kiddie pool of malfeasance, that's what we got to dive into.
I'll tell you what's much more likely is a reaction in the opposite direction. There was a woman who, granted, inappropriately began berating a Muslim married couple on a train a few weeks ago, and some other just secularist Australian, and this was on the news, berated the woman, put her in her place, for how dare she oppress this poor Muslim couple.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And she's a celebrity, and she's being elevated as courageous, when in fact the Muslim couple, if they're Muslim, they're going to indoctrinate their son to be a suicide bomber and their daughter to be sexually assaulted. That's not good.